Cop Spotting 68.
Monday, June 13th, 2011.
Colonel, there isn't anything else that I should know, is there?
I can assure you the answer is no.
There's something else going on.
Welcome to Pop Spotting. I'm Jen.
And I'm Ryan.
For Movie Monday, we're talking about the brand new release, Super 8.
That's right. It's a J.J. Abrams joint along with his buddy Steven Spielberg. And, well, you could say we're big J.J. Abrams fans.
No, you can't say that. It's more like we're slobbering fanboys.
Right. We're that. You know, he was behind Lost and Alias and movies like Cloverfield and the Star Trek reboot. So not a person unknown to pop culture, but we've certainly been following him quite a bit. Now, this movie has been described as something like Cloverfield meets, I don't know, Close Encounters or E.T. or The Goonies, and it's kind of hard to get a handle on what this movie is. I guess that's where all of the comparisons come from, and of course the very mysterious viral Comic-Con-esque marketing behind the movie hasn't helped quite a bit, but whatever this movie is, we were looking forward to it, and I gotta know, was it worth the wait?
I loved it. I love this movie. This is the best movie I've seen all year.
Whoa.
I enjoyed it so much because to me it's like a love letter to movies. You know, there's the kids coming of age and, you know, the relationships between them. There's the monster. There's the alien invasion part of it, which we've all seen in movies before. But the whole thing is an homage to all of those things. And,
right.
And a love letter to movie making.
Right, I can see that. I mean, a lot of people say that about Tarantino films. His movies are really movies not about the story, but about people who like movies. And I can see here a very strong level of nostalgia. I mean, Abrams is obviously paying tribute to these movies from his childhood, from our childhood. And in fact, the movie is under the brand of Amblin Entertainment, that company with the logo with E.T. and the kid riding his bike across the moon at the opening of this film. So you know exactly where he's coming from. And it's set in 1979.
The whole thing is a blast from the past, down to the set design, the cars. I'm a really big cars in movies person, and I really enjoy seeing those classic cars in any movies.
Right. You definitely respond to that, and the set decoration, the houses, the furniture, the toys in the kids' rooms. So, I mean, they did go out of their way to give you that sense of place. I don't think it was distracting, but it really helped you get it into the mood of where this movie was taking place. Now, the film pretty much starred unknowns, except for, I think, one of the adult actors and one of the kid
actors. Kyle Chandler from Friday Night Lights is in this film as one of the adults, and Elle Fanning, who is Dakota Fanning's sister. She's been in a couple of movies and mostly TV, but she's been acting since she was like two.
Right, right. So here we have, as you mentioned, kind of the monster movie, the scary alien invasion side of the movie, and then the coming of age kid movie, you know, sort of a cross, as we said, between Cloverfield and, I don't know, Stand By Me or something like that. Or The Goonies, I think, feels more of an apt comparison. I had heard that this film was basically two movies smushed together, and I was curious how that combination would work. What did you think?
I thought it worked well. I really enjoyed seeing the kids more than I enjoyed seeing the monster, because I think that Abrams had a real ear for how kids talk, and I thought the dialogue and the things that the kids did was very natural, and it made me actually want to see another movie with the kids. Like, maybe they grow up and go to film school.
Right. I mean, I think I'm completely with you there. That side of the film, if you had to divide it into parts, the children in this movie are spectacular. I mean, they're great actors. They're well directed. I mean, everybody knows what a challenge it is to work with child actors, and Abrams really knows what he's doing. But I think this movie is a throwback to some of those other films in the sense that most kids' movies today aren't really about kids. They're maybe presentations that people think kids might like, or entertainment that's talking down to them. But here, just like with, say, Stand By Me, you've got kids that are dealing with adult things. They've got kids living in the real world. I mean, there is a side of me that says that this is kind of overdone. Even Disney has a thing for broken families. But even though it's cliche, even though it's a style and a setup that we know really well, it was done well. And here you have children that are left to their own devices, that are coping with reality by creating a fiction through movie making. And in kind of the primary child arc or story arc for the kids in this, you've got the lead boy, Joel Courtney, playing Joe, who's dealing with the loss of his mother, as is his father, Kyle Chandler's character.
Right. I thought there was just a really good balance between the kid stuff and the grown-up stuff. In most kid movies, it seems like adults become kind of buffoon characters. They become secondary and we don't really get to know them. They're just foils for the kids. But there are scenes between the adults that I really enjoy too, because they're very honest and well written.
Right. I mean, there is to that, to some extent, the fact that, you know, the sense that all of the grown-ups in the movie, like any other movie like this, the grown-ups don't understand, the grown-ups don't really know what's going on, and the kids do. And there is an element of that, but I like what you're saying, because they're not, you know, cartoony parents. They're not completely clueless. It's not Home Alone kind of grown-ups here.
Yeah, that's right.
So you had Joel Courtney. I thought he was spectacular as the kid. I mean, he's clearly someone to watch, but Elle Fanning was really the kid of the kid ensemble that stole the show.
She was wonderful. There's a scene in which she has to act because they're making a movie and she's cast as the character's wife, and she's able to become this character, and you think about she's playing a character,
right.
And she pulls it off very well.
Right, in the sense that she's acting as someone who's acting, and you believe it on both levels, I think, to some extent. I mean, it was really well done there. You had Riley Griffith, he's a newcomer as well. He's the director, he's the lead of this troupe, making them all make a movie for his own ends or for his own satisfaction.
He's the Jerry O'Connell of this movie, if you will.
I like that. And you've got Ryan Lee, who was the sort of the pyromaniac cameraman.
He was
hilarious.
My favorite character, actually.
Really? And yeah. Then Gabriel Basso was the husband in the movie, but kind of the lead actor, the tallest kid. And he really, you know, kind of had a lot of physical humor that he had to do. But again, I think he did it really well.
Yeah, I enjoyed him a lot.
So we have the kids. Those were fantastic. That story was fantastic. You've got Kyle Chandler, who is a very familiar character to us, I would have to say, here.
One of our favorite shows is Friday Night Lights, and he plays Coach Taylor on Friday Night Lights. And he's really kind of being Coach Taylor in this movie, too. He's a very upstanding, almost heroic kind of figure. And that's okay, because I really like Coach Taylor.
Yeah, it's very Coach Taylor, because he's also trying to come to terms with dealing with his kids, and he's not, you know, he's trying to connect with them, trying to understand them. There's a really heartbreaking scene where he's like, he basically comes up with what he thinks is a solution to make both him and his son happy with coping with the loss of the mom, and it's totally the wrong thing, but, you know, you feel that he believes it's the right thing. So
right.
Some really great performances. The dad in the dad of Elle Fanning's character was, I thought for a minute it was going to be Josh Holloway, the way he came swaggering out of the car.
He's a very Sawyer like character. He's played by Ron Eldard, he's one of those it's that guy guys. He's been in, I think, Black Hawk Down and a couple of other movies.
So great child performances, good adult performances, wonderful set decoration. But the last piece of this film is the monster slash alien invasion portion, and even that I thought was pretty solid.
I enjoyed it a lot, except for, well, I think it's, to me, it suffered from the same thing that Cloverfield suffered from, in that we see way too much of the monster.
Really?
I really like when we're watching monster movies, I think mystery is the scariest thing of all.
I agree, and you hear that conversation in filmmaking about Jaws, about any film where the threat and the imagined threat is much worse than the reality in many cases. I thought that this film did a really fantastic progression from, you know, random noises in the wood, bushes shaking, shadows moving, people screaming, but you can't see what's happening, and then it does move slowly to the point where you see the actual creature in the film. And I thought that it was, you know, it's basically the full Monty of movie making, of monster movies. I don't think you can sustain an entire movie just with the hint of the bad guy. And in this case, that monster, even when I thought it was still a great monster,
I couldn't look at it. I thought it was utterly terrifying. I wanted to see less of it, but what we saw of it really scared me.
Well, I gotta say, you jumped and grabbed me quite a few times during this film.
I know. And I thought that was because there was a lot of tension. They really did a good job of sustaining tension and making us think that the stakes are really high.
Yeah, I mean, there are those gotcha moments. This movie does have those. The quintessential, you know, the guy, you know, something jumping out and scaring the heck out of you, but that wasn't all. That's why I think this film really worked on that level, is that you did have those, you know, gotcha moments. You did have those da 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 boo kind of parts of the film, and they were great, but you had some sincere soul shaking kind of tension and fear, you know, gripping your chair and waiting to see what happens next. It was good on that level as
and
well.
And part of that was because of Michael Giacchino's score.
Right. Giacchino, he behind Lost and many great film scores. Here, and I got to admit, I really want to hear what, say, Matt of Matt Plays Keys has to say, because when you're watching the film, his score and his style is so familiar and so recognized to anybody who's watched Lost,
right,
that even some of the minor chord progressions, even some of the heartwarming, touching moments, some of the what's coming around the corner moments, you hear the strings and the specific way that he builds tension, and it feels just like Lost. I mean, he definitely has a signature style. In fact, speaking of Lost, there are, I think, in my opinion, and for others as well, little hints and little clues, little shout-outs to Lost fans in this movie.
Most of them are visual, like right. They're on signs, and there's a board on which there are pictures of lost puppies, and you see the word Lost all
really
over the billboard.
Big. And you've got a jewelry store, you've got a gas station that kind of made us the number 108 turns up, and well, frankly, the lead character who's dealing with his relationship with his dad, what are the names of those characters?
Jack Lamb
is Kyle Chandler's character, and then Joe Lamb is the young kid. So you've got the Lamb family, and meanwhile on Lost, you've got the Shepherd family. So yeah, I think something's going on here. Now, you said you loved this movie, one of your favorites so far of the year. Where in the movie, I mean, what moment did you say, this is it, I'm on board for the ride?
The train wreck.
Right.
Which is not a spoiler because you see it in the previews.
Exactly.
But I thought the train wreck was so vivid and so violent. It just kind of took my breath away.
I got to go with you there. I mean, I like that too. I mean, it is a big summer blockbuster, so you need to have explosions. You need to have effects. And that was really where I think they invested almost all of their attention to detail and to physics. Now, if there's anything that I'm a stickler for in CG sequences and special effects and model work is the physics. It can't look fake. And it felt really real. I mean, you look at the previews for the Transformers film, and there are things and big things blowing up, and it looks like a cartoon. You don't believe that there's actually anything happening. With this train wreck, I felt it in my chest. It is very, very unlikely that things turn out the way they do. I mean, you know, you can't have your lead characters crushed to death. But despite that, you know, brief moment of this, you know, that's unrealistic, I did love the train wreck scene. I think that I really liked the quieter moments in this movie, again, where Giacchino's score gets a chance to sort of come out and float above it. You know, it's not the pounding, you know, tension scenes, but the aerial shots of the town or the peaceful moments in the graveyard before something happens, those moments really allowed you to settle down, to put your feet back on the ground and make you feel that what you were watching, again, was human and real.
There's also a sequence where we get to know Joe's mom a little bit through kind of a flashback, and we get to know how much he meant to Joe.
And in fact, and what, you know, Elle Fanning's character's, you know, processing of that and what it really means. Yes, very powerful stuff. And again, these are kids. So it's a great movie in that respect. Once again, childhood and what's beautiful about it and what's terrifying about it. It's a solid film for the alien monster scary side of it. But, you know, if people describe this as two films in one, I gotta say the math adds up to closer to 1.8 movies in one. I mean, frankly, the monster side of the movie, that sort of resolution, that arc of this creature felt incomplete to me.
It seemed like they were kind of in a hurry to finish it, and they had to wrap it up, and they had to find a convenient way to wrap it up and get everybody out safely. And to me, it just made the alien part of the movie feel kind of incomplete.
Right. I think incomplete is a good way to put it. You had two storylines. You had the alien trying to, you know, not necessarily be understood and loved, but at least to survive and to reach its objective. And you had the kids coming to terms with their lives and coming to get to know each other and growing up together, but surrounded by a situation that's bigger than all of them. But as these, you know, pieces were woven together relatively well and in a promising way, right toward the end, you needed a hook. You needed a thing to say, this is why these two stories needed each other. And honestly, I didn't see that. I think incomplete's the way to put it, because it was right at that end of the film. I have to admit, I did pause and think to myself, is that it? Like, is that it? I really felt that there was something missing, but not enough to completely derail, no pun intended, the entire film. I just think that they could have gone a little bit further. Nonetheless, that's our take on Super 8. It's rated PG-13. It's in very wide release, and it sounds like we're recommending that you see it, but let's get to our scores. What did you think?
5.
5 stars out of 5 from Jen. I'm going to give it a middling 4. Not a strong 4, but a good 4. 4, which gives our highest score so far 9 out of 10 for Super 8. And it sounds like we're saying we want you to see
it. Yeah, go right ahead and see it.
Before we go, let's share a few of the very quick thoughts that have come in from our listeners.
Layla K on Facebook writes, awesome. The kids were fantastic. I want to watch them in another movie now.
Yeah, I see that. Mel Chizadek on Twitter says, amazing. Best movie of the year so far. A must see on the big screen, if for nothing more than the awesome train wreck scene.
And Willie Baum on Twitter writes, Super 8 is a solid and good movie. Movie of the summer? Not even close. Definitely X-Men First Class is my favorite so far.
Fighting words there. Well, to find out whether or not you agree with his take, you're going to have to see Super 8. And if you do, please tell us what you thought about it.
As far as movie talk goes, there's another husband and wife podcast we like to tell you about. It's called The Projection Room. It's hosted by Marco and Rebecca Duran. They review movies, both new releases and some overlooked DVD titles that you might be interested in. And they also give away DVDs.
You can look for The Projection Room in the iTunes podcast directory or visit theprojectionroom.podbean.com. And thanks to Marco and Rebecca for their support of Pop Spotting.
If you don't have your own movie podcast, that's no problem. You can still share your reviews with us. We'd love your feedback on movies or anything else we cover here at Pop Spotting.
You can leave a comment on our blog at popspotting.net, drop us a line at feedback@popspotting.net, or leave us a voicemail at 815-310-0808.
You can also connect with us at facebook.com/popspotting or twitter.com/popspotting.
We'll be back soon with some TV talk because we gotta talk about Breaking Bad.
Thanks to Dan Pashman of The Sporkful for our theme song, and mahalo to all of you for listening.
For Pop Spotting, I'm Ryan.
And I'm Jen.
Aloha.